program. Tracy, how you doing today?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
We are doing outstanding. You ready for Christmas and all that?
Always ready for Christmas.
Just to be home for Christmas, right?
Yeah, it's nice to spend some time in God's country.
Saw the report where the Rockies are paying, you know, to keep Adam Ottavino available. I guess first things first, your thoughts on the contract that they gave him, what, 3 years, around $10 million. But secondly, how is he coming along with his following Tommy John surgery?
The effort is very positive, and they think he'll be fine. They expect him to be the closer. That's what they're projecting him as. So I saw some things where people were saying it might be out to the middle of the season, but I haven't heard that, and I maybe am not paying close enough attention. But and I think when you look at his situation, the fact he's arbitration eligible, he's probably going to get $2 or $3 million just to start with. And so I think 3 years at $10 million actually is fairly club friendly, and it's a lot. I mean, a lot fewer problems with that signing than I do with the multi-year deals for Jason Mott and Chad Qualls, either of whom could even make their own team's postseason rosters.
With a closer coming off of Tommy John surgery, is I guess, do you have to worry about as much as with overuse, since they're going one inning, maybe, you know, two at the most? Is there anything into that, or is it still the same amount of rehab as a starter would have to go through?
You still have to get to everything healed. You have to get to where you're feeling good and you've got everything under control. But I guess, yeah, I guess they're looking at him being back in June, so I take back what I said earlier.
Okay.
But you know, he's making $1.3 million this year and $2.1 million in 2017. So obviously then it goes to $7 million in 2018. So obviously they feel like they're getting a discount the first 2 years, and then they're back ending it into that third year. But you know, there's no reason not to expect him to come back. Guys seem to have come back from this type of thing. He is very, very much into his workout program. I don't think that's going to be a concern as far as him taking care of things. He's always been a guy that's taking care of health issues and stuff. Like I said, they know him. They know his approach. They know his attitude. It's a lot easier for me to see him get that money than it is guys that are 37, 38 years old and scuffling to survive.
Tracy, I've been reading reports that St. Louis is working Matt Holliday out at first base. Is there anything to read into that, especially with you know, Alex Gordon and Cargo being rumored to as free agents and trade possibilities? Is there anything to read into that they may be making room for one of those guys?
Well, I think what they're doing is they're looking at their options, and they want to work. You want to work Holliday out at first base because you want to get a feel as quickly as possible as to whether or not you think you might be able to make the conversion. I don't think it's that easy to go to first base. You know, I guess if you want to just have somebody over there like Alvarez, who butchered first base at Pittsburgh, that's one thing. But, I mean, there was a guy that moved from third base. You'd think he could catch ground balls in that. But when you get a chance to watch the really good first baseman, and I think Rockies fans for quite a while did between Galarraga and Helton, I mean, over 20 years of premier first baseman, you may start to lose an appreciation for what it takes to be an above-average player at that position. We'll see if Holliday could do that, but I'm sure that's more of wanting to get a quick cram course in with him and get a feel for how agile and how relaxed he can be at that position before they go out and do something outfield-wise.
You've seen Matt Holliday a lot. Do you think that would be an easy transition for him to make? Because he's not the greatest defensive player anyways. Is that something you think he could do, make that transition?
Yeah, it's a little bit different from the outfield because you're not having to range so far on fly balls and judge him off the bat that much. I don't know. It's been a long time since he played third base, and that's what he was originally signed as. Remember, so he does have a background of being able to field ground balls. You know, I think part of what what puts you over the top, though, as a first baseman, and this is something that you'd only be able to tell by watching him, is how well you throw. I mean, I know Steve Garvey won Gold Glove somehow. And it wasn't just because the writers liked him, because he was a great guy, because the coaches voted on that. But, you know, I have a heart. I think it's a first baseman who can throw like Helton did or Galarraga did really does a lot to help your whole defense, because he can cut runners down and keep guys from advancing bases. So if you're going to be a really good defensive team, that's something you'd like to think your first baseman could do. So I'm sure that's part of what the Cardinals want to see, too, is how does he react to the throw to second base, throw to third base? How easily can he make that throw?
Tracy, there's been a lot of, you know, deals here lately. I guess as you kind of look back on at least what's been done so far, who are maybe the teams you think really came out on top with that, and maybe some teams that maybe didn't come out on top so much, so at least to this point?
Well, I really like what the Giants have done. I think they went in and we overlook a lot of their offense because of the park they play in, but I think they're the highest scoring road team in the National League. And to go in and to be able to bring in Samardzija and Cueto to put behind Bumgarner, that's a pretty strong lineup now. Now all of a sudden you start pushing guys back where Kane, who's coming off Tommy John surgery, he becomes your fourth starter. And all of a sudden Heston, who actually was your only guy other than Bumgarner to take regular turns last year, he becomes like a sixth man, a swing man that can either go in the rotation or in the bullpen. So I think that they really went and strengthened themselves at those two spots. Whether they go ahead and make another move to bring in, say, an outfielder, because they are a little short on outfield depth, that would be the really interesting thing to see.
Tracy Ringlesby joining us here in the Sports Zone. So when do you think I know what I'm going to ask you. I print out a story. Wade Boggs is going to have his number retired as a Boston Red Sox player. Just your thoughts on Wade Boggs and his meaning to the game. I mean, you know, he's considered one of the best hitters out there. Were you a big Wade Boggs fan whenever you got to see him play?
You know, I guess the thing that disappointed me about Boggs was I watched him take BP in Fenway Park and hit rockets over the bullpen, and I never saw him really want to use that power in games. You know, he was very content to just hit the ball off the wall, but you know, he was a great hitter. I mean, he got a lot of hits and used the wall at Fenway Park very well. But I just felt like he never made the adjustment that so many good left-handed hitters make. That most of them come up being able to drive the ball the other way. Heck, when Reggie Jackson was at Arizona State, he had everything to left field. And then as they get more experience and more time in the big leagues, they learn how to turn on pitches, they learn how to anticipate counts, and they start to be much more power hitters. There's a couple of that. George Brett, guys like that. I just prefer that type of a player because I think they become more valuable, particularly when they're corner position players.
Do you think he's going to be most known? Because he played for the Red Sox for those 10, 11 years and went to the Yankees and finished up in Tampa, right? He's going to be most known as a Red Sox player, right?
Yeah, I mean, you go to the Hall of Fame, it's a Red Sox hat.
Yeah.
You know? That's what he was. He was a Red Sox player. So, I mean, I think the players who should have numbers retired are players that go into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I don't think you should retire everybody's number. I mean, I think the Yankees have gotten carried away with it with some things. I think you can have your own Wall of Fame or whatever you want to call it, and recognize players who played for you and impacted your game. But I think if you use a criteria that the player whose number we retire will be the player who goes into Cooperstown, you make it a little more special for that moment. You put a little more significance into that number. Otherwise, you know, you'll end up like the Astros. They got like eight numbers retired, and they haven't retired any of their Hall of Fame. They haven't retired Bagwell or Biggio yet. You know, I think it loses its flavor, it loses its pizzazz if you start to make it players that are really good for you. I mean, that's nice, but I think there's other ways to recognize those players.
You were over there Saturday after the game. Larry Shyatt said Omaha was the best team that they had faced this year. What did you think? Because I thought they were a good team, no doubt. I thought Cal was a better team than Omaha, but it was still a nice win for the Cowboys. But what did you think?
Well, I think New Mexico State, too, might have been as good or better. But I think one of the funny things, and it's been a good test for these guys, is that this is a team with a lot of young players. A lot of the games that people thought were going to be weak spots on their schedule, those are all teams having, like, the best years in their history. I mean, Southern just lost by 3 points at Memphis the other night after winning at Mississippi State, after beating Tulane. You start looking around at what some of these schools have done that they've played, and I think it's great. It's also, I think that they have 6 road games this year,
uh-huh.
and they normally play 3. I think Shad was very smart and that intelligent in that approach, because what he's doing is he's basically giving the young players, a lot of freshmen, a wake-up call real quick as to the difference between high school and this level. And I think if you go in and you schedule the, what was the name of that one school we had? The Dean School? Dean College?
Keene College. Yeah.
Peru State, and that to play your regular season games, and you win by 50 points, I think you can at that time give the young players in particular a little bit of a misleading concept of what they're up for. And so I think with a young team, as opposed to some places like we have a young team, we're going to get an easier schedule so they can get their feet on the ground. I'd rather have the tougher schedule. I'd rather have the road games so that the young guys quickly learn what it's going to be like. Because when it gets to January and they go into Albuquerque and they go into San Diego State and they go into Utah State, those places, that's not very friendly. So you might as well have more of it in advance. I think it'll make you better in the long run.
Very good. Tracy, we appreciate it. I won't be here next Monday, but I'll be in touch with you about what time and everything.
Is Monty
going to be there? Monty no. will not be here either next Monday.
Oh, good. I look forward to it.
So we'll get a time
very
squared
funny.
Away. Have a very
You know what I can't figure out is how you got such a cute grandson, you know?
He looks just like
him. Not hardly.
Have a great Christmas and a happy New Year, Tracy. Thank you so much.
All right, see you guys.
Thanks. Bye. There you go.